This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So now it's really spring, and with the change of the seasons come rituals that remind us of what matters in each of our lives. That is when we come to you. Except in summer, we don't usually come then, to ask for your support. Because we matter to you. At least, we hope we do. If you've never supported us with a donation anyway, would you now? It doesn't matter how much. If you have, would you please do it again? And if you're a sustaining member, would you consider giving a little more? Our show is ongoing, 20 years so far. And so is the need, not just for us. I'm thinking also for you. Our world never ceases to be interesting and challenging. Pandemics, injustice, leaders to be held accountable, entire systems falling in on themselves, riddled with rot that need to change. An ever-shifting reality, lots of them, in fact, that cry out to be explored. That's what we do every week. And we need you, really need you, to keep going. Want to be part of this weird project called On the Media? Just text OTM to 70101. That's OTM to 70101. Or go to onthemedia.org and click on donate. Thank you. This past year, most of us were awash in a news cycle driven by the pandemic. Daily, we grappled with infection data, vaccine updates, social restrictions, and public officials trying to balance fatigue, facts, and safety. But there are some in the country cut off from the deluge, offered instead merely a trickle. Obviously, the American prison system wasn't built with a pandemic in mind, with inadequate spacing for quarantine, cleaning supplies, and access to health care. But the pandemic has focused a brighter light on decades-old issues surrounding incarceration, including access to information about news and policies that could be matters of life and death. John J. Lennon has been especially concerned. He's written about prison life under COVID in the New York Times Magazine. He's a contributing writer for the Marshall Project, contributing editor at Esquire, and an advisor to the Prison Journalism Project. He's also serving an aggregate sentence of 28 years to life at Sullivan Correctional Facility in New York. That accounts for the quality of the line.
So I am in the belly of the cell block. And I'm calling you on one of four phones.
You've been at the Sullivan Correctional Facility in New York for 19 years, right?
That's correct. I mean, for a couple of years, you're on Rikers Island fighting the case, and I was convicted and sent up for 28 years to life.
Have you challenged the verdict?
No, I'm guilty. I killed a man. I was a drug dealer. I was in my early 20s, and you know, I take full responsibility for what I did.
When did you start writing?
I learned how to write in a creative writing workshop in Attica. In about 2010, this professor came in from Hamilton College, and he volunteered to teach a creative writing class, and kind of just stumbled into the class and just took to it.
So there's a scene in an article you wrote in February about getting the Sunday edition of the New York Times. You subscribe to the actual print edition, and you say you love the texture and the smell, but it's expensive, and so there's a literal line in your cell block to read it after you're through?
Oh, well, I'm one of the fortunate ones to actually get the New York Times. The New York Times is pricey when you subscribe to it, and a lot of folks can't afford that. And we don't get online as most people do, so I pass it on when I'm done. So there's just a line of guys, you know, let me get it after you, let me get it after you, that kind of thing. Some guys get a little disgruntled when I pass it to somebody before. They're, you know, they want. It goes by seniority, who's been here. I try to let them work that out amongst themselves. And but there are several people that want to read it, yes.
Could you describe what news consumption is like for people in prison?
There is a kiosk, and you know, there's an online, I think, Associated Press they have. But mainly, depending on what prison you're in, some prisons have TVs in their cells. Currently, Sullivan Correctional Facility, where I'm at, does not have TVs in their cells. So we mostly get our news from NPR or periodicals, subscribe to periodicals. This is a big radio jail. It's so if you're going to get news, you're going to get it from NPR.
NPR is is popular?
It is. Brooke, I'm a big fan of yours. I was telling your producers. I was like, oh, I love Brooke Gladstone. I enjoy the show.
Can you talk to me a little bit about misinformation? One of your cellmates thought Hank Aaron died from taking the coronavirus vaccine. How do ideas like that get around?
You know, it's the same way it gets around on the outside. There's a lot of misinformation on the internet, and we call home. And depending on who we're calling, it's where we're getting the information from, right? So it's pretty much like the same misinformation that's out there, right? I'm dealing with it right now. They approved Johnson & Johnson, and there's been some unfortunate news about, you know, blood clotting. So, you know, everyone's saying, see, they had us all lined up. They're going to give us the Johnson & Johnson, and we're all going to die. You know, so it's, you have to sort of sift through that, and it's difficult for individuals to, difficult for me as a journalist. And I just try to report the story. I try not to convince people of what they should or shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm. Now, public radio obviously is not always right. It hasn't always been right about the pandemic, but there's a serious effort to try to be right. And I just wonder whether people consuming different news sources within the prison have debates over, say, the efficacy of vaccines. Is anybody's mind ever changed, or is it exactly how it is on the outside, and it's very difficult to get anybody to change their mind?
Yeah, it's a good question. The administrators could perhaps do a better job with informing folks. You take the vaccine, I think people on the outside kind of want to know what's going to happen with their travel restrictions, what's going to happen with their local gym. They want to know what their life's going to look like. I think the same goes with folks in prison. They want to know, are they going to be able to hug their family on a visit? They want to know, are they going to be able to attend the family reunion program, which is the conjugal visit where wives can come up? If I don't get the vaccine, am I going to be prevented from seeing my family? So that's really not being conveyed. To be fair to corrections also, the judge just ruled that we all get vaccines, and they're still trying to sort that out. So hopefully there'll be a campaign where they can give us some information so we can sort of see what our life would look like and make informed decisions as to whether or not to take or not take the vaccine.
You had mentioned that the Final Call, the newspaper of Louis Farrakhan's Nation of Islam, has been very skeptical of vaccines, and that view's gotten around.
Yeah, some of the fellows do subscribe to that.
Do you remember what the headlines were?
Yeah, we don't want your vaccine, and mm-hmm. Big pharma, big money, big fears. Understandably, the African-American community has good reason to be skeptical about, you know, government studies. There's good reason for that.
How about your family on the outside? Are they skeptical?
Everyone's talking about the vaccine. My mom lives down in Florida. Look, I'm not out there, you know, so she's, my presence is not felt. I'd be pretty persuasive if I was with my mom, but I'm not. I'm over a prison phone, and people are in her ear. So she doesn't want to take it. She's like, I mean, my mom, you know, mm-hmm. She's like, I don't want it. They should give it to you. And she's saying, you know, I think they shot water in that Joe Biden's arm. And then my aunt, you know, comes to visit her. And it's a cast of characters, even when I'm calling home. You know, my aunt's a fan of Trump, and I'm trying to navigate this over a prison phone. And I'm like, stop it. Don't listen to Marianne. And I'm saying, just take it. And, you know, it's difficult.
You mentioned how expensive the New York Times is. What is the cost of information, good or bad? Family and friends can serve as links to the outside world, but even talking to them isn't free. In your article, you highlighted a prison communications firm. This is a private firm, right? Called Securus Technologies.
Look, you have to understand, it's a controversial issue. So it's a private contractor. It comes in, makes deals with the state, and it has deals with plenty of states. They have phones, and now they have this new technology. They own the company JPay, where they have these tablets, and there's a tablet program now. We're basically on those tablets. We can send emails, 30-second videos from family. You know, I haven't seen my mother. She has Parkinson's. I really enjoy those videos.
Mm-hmm.
I could cut and paste on an email. I was never able to cut and paste. And I could use email. So, I mean, I'm a journalist. This helps me. So I'm kind of a fan of the program.
But there's no internet.
But no internet, correct.
Mm-hmm.
They charge you for each email. They've come under scrutiny for this. But, you know, when you are using a Walkman and a typewriter for my whole 20 years I've been in prison, close to it, you're grateful when you get some technology. I mean, I thumbtapped much of this piece for the New York Times Magazine using JPay.
Securus Technologies provides JPay, this access to the tablets. It also owns phone contracts for a lot of prisons and county jails, and charges can go as high as $14 for a 15-minute call. But downloading your mom's 30-second video only costs a buck, right?
Yeah. The thing about it is those contracts, certain states and certain counties, they allow that. The public sector is culpable here, right?
Mm-hmm.
New York State prisoners won a lawsuit, so they can't really charge us that much. But other counties and states, they do. So there's probably just as much culpability on the elected officials of those counties and those states.
Securus, when it comes to phone service, is really cashing in. I thought it was surprising, though, that you argued that these tablets are actually a reason, at least for now, to keep for-profit companies invested in the prison system.
I did argue that. I mean, I was looking at both sides. The tablets, I appreciate the tablets. I don't appreciate other incarcerated people being charged $14 for a 15-minute phone call. I think it's absurd, and I think it needs to stop. In terms of the tablets here in New York, I think the program has some issues, but in totality, it is an added benefit, and it enriches the quality of our lives.
Tom Gores, the businessman whose private equity firm owns Securus, was called upon by an advocacy group called Worth Rises to divest from the company. Worth Rises opposes any private companies profiting from incarceration, and it put an ad in the New York Times saying, if Black Lives Matter, what are you doing about Detroit Pistons owner Tom Gores? And the ad called him a prison profiteer. Has Mr. Gores ever responded to the controversy?
He acknowledged that is a controversial thing, and it probably should be taken up by nonprofits. But guess what? Nonprofits don't have the infrastructure to do
mm-hmm.
it. So if Big Bad Tom Gores is not coming in here offering us technology, I'm still typing on my typewriter, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm still listening to my Walkman. I mean, I'm in the 80s over here. The government's not doing it.
So you're saying there is no operating alternative to JPay right now?
No, there's none. Look, I wish I could read The New Yorker online, The Atlantic online. You know how I have to get that stuff? People take snapshots of great articles. Like when I have to do research for an article, people take snapshots of those articles and then send them as pictures on JPEG so I could get the message in real time. Mm-hmm. Or alternatively, they can make a copy and put it in the mail if I want to read like a great article online. Mm-hmm. Else, I just subscribe to the print edition. But not everything online, as you know, appears in print.
But you're lucky because you have family and friends who can support you in this way and materially.
Yeah, I mean, I'm self-sufficient. I don't depend on my family, but they have been very nice over the years. But I've earned my own income with journalism. I'm very grateful for that. I mean, it's a nuanced situation, right? You really can't have a bank account. There's a Son of Sam law in New York says you cannot profit from your crime in writing about your crime. The exception to the Son of Sam law is earned income, though. And I earn my income through journalism. And any time that I extensively write about my crime, I've donated that money to nonprofits, usually doing criminal justice work.
Beyond JPay, is there another best step, maybe something advocates or lawmakers should be considering when figuring out the access to information that inmates can and should have?
You know, who's it on, right? Is it on the public sector or the private sector to offer that? I wish that instead of AP that I could download online Atlantic articles or online New Yorker articles. I mean, I think that's on the provider, but that's also on some of the magazines to sort of get past, you know, let's be honest, the kind of rough reputation that Securus has. Like, who wants to make a deal with them when they're sort of scrutinized like that? But then guess what? We don't have that information, to your point, right? So it's a really, really thorny issue.
What are the stakes here? I began with the anecdote in your piece in the Times about people lining up for the Times, but does there seem to really be a hunger? Would it help them in prison? Is it something that is really worth paying attention to among so many other things?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I am where I am today because of access to the articles and the magazines that I mentioned. I learned how to write in that creative writing workshop at Attica. But I would spill over these feature magazine articles and reverse engineer them and like really, really wonder how like these writers do what they do. And that's because my mom subscribed to these magazines. And I was privileged to have a mother that had. Unfortunately, a lot of folks don't have that extra money. Yeah, to answer your question, of course it's important. But these are private corporations too, these media companies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the question is, how important is it to them, right, to get us the information? They have a lot of gorgeous writing online that I wish my peers can read. Sometimes I don't want to give up my New Yorker magazine, or because I have these gorgeous sentences or underlined, I don't want to give up my Esquire magazine. I don't want to pass that on. We started in this, and we went down a road of questioning the ethics of Securus, but a lot of money being made in media in America, and maybe it's a question we need to put on these companies. I mean, some of them are colleagues of ours, some of the editors and chiefs of these places. I actually thought about writing an open letter to Jeffrey Goldberg and David Remnick and saying, hey, you know, make a deal with Securus. Let us read The New Yorker. Let us read The Atlantic. Because it really helped me as a human being to read such gorgeous writing and important reporting.
In a piece earlier this month, you wrote about skepticism of the vaccine being pretty widespread. Is there a source of information that is trusted enough by the skeptics to open them up to taking a vaccine?
You know, they came in a couple of days ago after the court ordered that all New York incarcerated people in jails and prisons get the vaccine. And they said, yes or no, you getting it or not? Let's go, yes or no. The office is coming around, yes or no. That was inappropriate. I think we need to be a little nuanced about how we approach this. You know, there's a lot of influential prisoners. And if administrators don't lean into relationships with influential prisoners, like, for example, during this crisis, and they don't look to work with them, say, hey, we have this problem here. We are looking to get as many people vaccinated as we can. We don't want to tell you to press the population, just to inform the population with candid conversations about some of the things I mentioned earlier. This is what's going to happen. You won't be able to use this or go on this visit or go attend that. There needs to be more communication, Brooke, mm-hmm. and you need to tap into your resources. We're not liabilities. Some of us are assets. Many of us are assets.
John, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks for checking out our midweek podcast. You can hear the big show on Friday. We usually post it around dinner time, and it's going to be good.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.